Good morning. It's good to see everybody here this morning. I know if you look in your bulletin, it says Josh Luna. You look up here and you think, man, he got old and put on some pounds. Josh, that's on me. I didn't get a hold of Sandy. Josh let me know a long time ago that he wasn't going to be here, and we've been planning this for a while. But again, it's great to see everybody here. This morning's lesson will be purposely, it'll be just a little bit shorter. One, we have potluck, and two, we have a little presentation right after this about the fellowship groups, and so you know, it'll be just a little bit shorter than normal. Okay, I'd like to begin. Philippians 2 and 12 says, "Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." Has there ever been a sermon that for whatever reason just stuck with you? You still remember it. It's still there. When I was somewhere middle school age, growing up at Johnstown, we had different preachers every week, different members of the congregation. It wasn't my dad that preached it. I don't remember who preached this one. But I remember that verse, Philippians 2 and 12. And my takeaway, whether this is what he meant to the preacher meant for it to be or not, my takeaway was, if I'm going to heaven, it's all on me. And that picture up there, that's how that made me, that stuck with me like that. That it's just, you're out there, you're by yourself, you've got to make it happen. Now, there's some truth to that. There is. We know no one can pray us into heaven. I can't get to heaven based on my family's faith. And I think we all understand that. We're all responsible for our own actions. But I feel like there's sometimes is a misconception, I feel like in church, that I just have to do this all on my own. Now, I don't know, maybe it's just me. But from discussions I've had with other people, it's like it's me against the world as a Christian instead of it's us against the world. I don't know if you ever feel that way, if you ever feel isolated, like you're on some spiritual island, you know, that sort of thing. Here's the thing. Our culture is incredibly individualistic, and it encourages us to be that way. You guys are all aware of that. But that's not the way that Christianity is intended to be. We're a family. We're there for each other. And so let's look at John chapter 17. Verses 22 through 23. "The glory which you have given me, I have given to them, that they may be one, just as we are one. I in them, and you in me, that they may be perfected in unity, so that the world may know that you sent me and love them even as you love me." Jesus prayed that his followers to be one, to be perfected in unity. Well, that's hard to do when we're acting only as an individual, not as a team or not as a family. When I was in high school playing basketball, there were times when I tried to take it all on myself. No matter what was going on, I tried to take it all on myself. I'm not trying to brag here. I'm going to tell you just a little. There's one game we played, I scored 35 points, tried to do it all by myself. I walked over and I told my dad, I said, "Dad, look, I scored 35 points. He said, "Son, you had 13 turnovers. You know why I had 13 turnovers? Because I tried to do it all by myself. I scored 35 points. You know what? We lost that game. I tried to do it all by myself." See, that's not how it's designed. That's not what Christianity is. Christianity, it's we're a team. Yes, we have individual, we have things we have to do individually, of course. But we're here, we're there with each other. And to be successful, we have to work as a team. Consider Jesus' ministry. If you would turn over to Matthew chapter 4, verses 18 through 22. Matthew chapter 4, verses 18 through 22. This is when Jesus is first beginning his ministry. It says, "Now as Jesus was walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men." Immediately they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James the son of Zebedee and John his brother, in the boat with Zebedee their father, mending their nets. He called them. Immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. What is one of the first things Jesus does when he begins his ministry? He puts together a group. Josh did Picasso's last week. I did Bible school clip art, okay? But you guys, you get the picture there, right? That he puts together this group. These men learn together. They work together. They suffer together. We know they would have lived together. They would have just, they're a family. They're a group that has come together here. And outside of, we know Jesus needed time by himself to pray and to think and that sort of thing. Outside of that, whenever we read in the New Testament, when do we see Jesus alone? We don't. How often in the Gospels do you see the disciples acting alone? I know there's a handful of instances, but I mean, even when Jesus sent out the 70 followers in Luke 10, he sent them out in pairs, right? And so there's something about, you know, we're there to be there with one another. Let's look over Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2, verses 41 through 47. So this is Peter's giving his sermon on the day of Pentecost, and starting verse 41 of chapter 2. "So then those who had received his word were baptized, and that day there were added about 3,000 souls. They were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone kept feeling a sense of awe, and many wonders and signs were taking place through the apostles. And all those who had believed were together and had all things in common. And they began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them with all as anyone might have need. Day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people, and the Lord is adding to their number day by day those who are being saved." Now, getting that picture up there, I'm sure that is a first century Judean meal, right? But here's what we see. They're spending time with one another. They're taking care of each other's needs. They're visiting each other in their homes. It says they're taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, or the New Living Translation says they shared their meals with great joy and generosity. Just think for a moment what that would have been like to be a Christian there. You're surrounded by other Christians. Yes, this is new, possibly dangerous, right? But you're surrounded by other Christians. You're learning from others, but you're teaching others. You're ministering to your brothers and sisters. They're ministering to you. They're one family. They're united. All right. And so, just what an amazing thing that they're all there together like that, and they're there for one another. And it says the Lord is adding to their number day by day. How's that happening? Well, they're telling other people. They're seeing what these Christians have. This is a pretty amazing thing. But then if you jump ahead to Acts 8 and 1, halfway through the verse, well, we'll start there. When it says Saul was in hearty agreement with putting him to death, that they're talking about Stephen. "And on that day, a great persecution began against the church in Jerusalem, and they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria except the apostles." Okay, so now they're scattered. So now they're out, they're going different places. Can they still be a church family? Are they still united? Well, if you go down to verse 4, "Therefore, those who had been scattered went about preaching the word." So wherever they went, even if they're separate from one another, they continued to be faithful. And in some ways, reading between the lines, these would have been the people that later on, I mean, we know there are Christians all over the Mediterranean world, right? And we don't talk about this much in kind of Western society. There were Christians. The church spread throughout Iraq and Iran, clear over into like Afghanistan, spreads down into Africa and across North Africa. You see a lot of that in the up through about the 400s. And I know I can say this with certainty. They built a similar family of faith wherever they went. Yes, Paul planted churches out there, but Paul also found believers in these different places through his missionary journeys. And so we know that's the case. And so even though they're scattered, they're still together. They're still united in their faith in Christ, and they're still bringing together others to build up that faith. Now, when Paul's wrapping up his letter in 1 Corinthians, he tells them in chapter 16, verses 13 through 14, he says, "Be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. Let all that you do be done in love." So he tells them, stand firm in that faith and be strong. And then near the end of 1 Peter, in chapter 5, verses 8 through 9, Peter says, "Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. But resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world." Now, when we stand together, when we're a family, when we're one, we can do these things. Notice how Peter says someone, singular, right? When hunting, lions find the isolated one, the one that's weak or lost or sick. In class this morning, Travis was talking about watching nature videos. When I was a kid, I used to watch all kinds of nature videos. Nature, Mutual of Omaha's Wild America, any of that sort of stuff. I love those shows, okay? That picture right there, that lion is scared to death and running away. Why? Well, because look what's behind him. Lions do not attack the one herd. That's not what they do. They go after those that are outside, those that are, like I said, that are weak or lost or sick. Well, why does that happen? Because that herd is too alert. It's too strong. All those individuals take care of and protect each other. All right, now, if all those water buffalo, if that's the church, and that lion's the devil, see how that works? And so that's why we come together. That's why Jesus, again, from the beginning, he has a group around him. The disciples, we know, are a close group. We see throughout the church that they're coming together. And that's what we need. We need to be that group together. And brethren, we truly have a wonderful congregation here, a family of Christians that love and take care of each other. My hope, my goal in this was just simply to remind us, to encourage us to be one as Jesus prayed for. We'll offer an invitation. If there's anyone here who you're not part of the group, you're not part of the congregation, not a baptized believer of the church, you can do that. Or if you've fallen away, you need the prayers of the church for whatever reason, we offer you the opportunity to come forward while we stand and while we sing.